Sorry, just setting up a moment. Right, good morning. For people who don't know, my name is Mike, and I'm one of the pastors here at Redeemer. It's wonderful to have this opportunity to continue our series in Proverbs. We've jumped a little bit. The last time we were in Proverbs, we were in Proverbs 3. So 3:31, it's a common mathematical move, but I'll sort of go over that a little bit more later on. The first thing I want to talk about, though, is nothing to do with Proverbs. It's a poll that I looked at recently, an article about a poll. There's a company called Gallup who do various opinion polls around the world, and they've been doing so for a long time. What's really interesting when a company like this can poll people of different nations over long periods of time is you get to see really fascinating trends emerging. I was reading an article this week on the opinions people have of their leaders. This was an article looking at the G7 countries, the sort of seven most economically advanced countries, of which the UK is very fortunate to consider themselves one of. And it was the confidence those countries had in their leadership. And what was interesting in this article was they were pointing out a significant drop in confidence of leadership amongst two of the G7 countries, the USA and the UK. And out of those two, the drop in the UK's confidence in its leadership was the most stark. And by stark, what I mean is from 2006, when this poll was carried out, 80% of people in the UK said they had confidence in the country's leadership. 80% is a pretty high number. And that was roughly in line with a lot of the other G7 countries at the time, slightly higher, actually. As of 2021, the confidence polled in the UK was 60%. That's a bit of a fall, but over a sort of 15-year period. As of 2023, for the UK, that confidence stood at 30%, a significant drop over just a two-year period compared to the period before. And this poll was looking at the comparisons between the G7 countries. And so those countries have often faced the same headwinds, same political issues. They've all faced COVID, the global energy crisis, and yet other countries have not had such a drop. So we have to suggest that this isn't explained by party politics or specific policies in that country. And in fact, often the confidence measured by these polls is higher than the people that voted for the party in power. So this isn't just pure partisanship, people voting for who they like. They're saying they're confident in people even if they didn't vote them in. They see something about those leaders that was good when they were confident. And equally, they see something problematic with their leaders when they're lacking in confidence. Now, this isn't a political talk. This isn't a current affairs discussion, but we can probably think of some things we've seen in the last few years that would give rise to the idea that we don't have confidence in our leaders. And I think it comes down not so much to politics or policies, but to character. It comes down to who those leaders are, who we perceive them to be, and whether we perceive that they might have our best interests at heart. Such a drop in confidence suggests a drop in the character, the perceived character of the people leading us. And this is important because leaders have an effect on everyone that they lead. The leaders of our political class have an effect on all of us, but there are other leaders in our lives. You'll have leaders at work, your bosses or managers or the people that own your business. You will have leaders in your community, people who are influential in groups you're part of, leaders in the church, whether it's an MC leader or a pastor. You'll even have leaders in your families, people who make the decisions, who everyone else follows. Maybe you find you have leaders in groups of friends, the person who makes sure everyone gets organized or everyone meets up every now and then. We're surrounded by leaders, and many of us will be in positions of leadership. And so this passage in Proverbs is talking about leaders. It's talking about kings. That's what it mentions. It says kings. But really, this is about leaders. And so as we talk this morning through this passage in Proverbs, we want to think about leaders. I want to think about questions of, are you a leader? Are there contexts in which you're leading? And how do you interact with leaders around you? Do you help them? Do you weigh them down? How do you feel about those leaders? Would there be a better leader? Throughout this, we're also going to look at a better leader, and that is Jesus. This passage in Proverbs is quite an interesting one amongst the whole sort of canon of Proverbs. It's attributed to someone called Lemuel, the King Lemuel. Everyone will be very familiar with the story of King Lemuel, all the different stories in the... No, Lemuel's not mentioned anywhere else in the Bible. Lemuel is just this name that appears here in Proverbs. So scholars assume that Lemuel probably isn't one of the lines of the kings of Israel or Judah, because they're all pretty well documented. Most likely Lemuel is a nearby kingdom, someone who's seen the kingdom of Israel, seen the power and the strength of their God, and has become a convert to Judaism, has started following Yahweh. And so Lemuel is sort of copying the trend he sees in Israel of this idea of wisdom literature, people passing down wisdom in their family lines. Lemuel is writing his own idea of wisdom down, most likely to the person who's going to inherit the throne afterwards, most likely therefore a son. But what's quite interesting about Lemuel is that immediately in the start of the passage, verse 1, the sayings of King Lemuel, an inspired utterance his mother taught him. Lemuel takes the quite unusual position in Proverbs of immediately handing over the credit for this work to someone else. This is the sayings of Lemuel, but this isn't the sayings of Lemuel, actually. It's the sayings of Lemuel's mum. And that's quite fascinating because Lemuel is showing something here right from the start in his leadership style, which is a level of humility. At this time, one of the big aspects of being a king would have been legacy. What are you known for? What are you remembered for? And so Lemuel is almost giving that away in this process. Right at the start, he's saying, this is not something I'm saying. I'm repeating this, and I'm repeating this probably to my own child because I care about their rule. But actually, this is something my mother taught me. This is something that came from someone whose only real position and job in life was to have children, have sons especially. The ancient Near East was not a place where women particularly flourished or were looked highly upon. So Lemuel is doing something quite strong to start with by crediting it to someone who otherwise would not have a huge voice. And it's quite interesting that this passage is sort of bookended in verse 8 and 9 by saying, speak for those who cannot speak for themselves. As part of this writing of Proverbs 31, Lemuel is putting forth this idea of saying to people, speak for those who can't speak for themselves, and I'm doing that in that process. And as we look through the rest of the passage, it will be important for us to take that context in mind. Who's saying this? And what kind of character are we talking about? And we see some character of Lemuel's mother as well in verse 2. Listen, my son. Listen, son of my womb. Listen, my son, the answer to my prayers. Lemuel's mother is incredibly impassioned in what she's saying here. She's not just saying, hey, Lemuel, here's some rules. Stick by him, you'll be all right. She's not just saying, oh, follow these rules, you'll get to heaven. She's giving Lemuel this guidance because she cares. She cares a huge amount about Lemuel, about the kind of ruler he'll become. He's the answer to her prayers. This is someone writing in an impassioned way, someone who deeply wants their child to succeed in life. And therefore, she's got to spell out what success looks like. What does succeed mean for her son? What kind of person does she want him to become? And we can get the idea that Lemuel probably took this on, because Lemuel is then writing this down and it's being included in whatever process it came to be in the book of Proverbs. It's cared about. This wisdom is cared about. It's important to the people who are part of it. So we have to take that into account as well. Lemuel's mother cares what kind of person Lemuel becomes. This is a character discussion. It's not a set of rules. It's not a set of regulations. It's not policy. It's not the idea that, oh, you could be the best king if you do this. It's the idea that I care so much about you that I want this to be for you. And throughout the rest of this passage, we see three main aspects of what she wants for Lemuel's kingship. She talks about vices, about virtues, and about the vocation of a king. The things that will bring a king down, the things that will raise a king up, and the reason for being a king in the first place. Now, I opened with a talk about leadership, about governments, and therefore this is going to apply to all of us. This is not just to be applied to kings. I assume no one in here is a king. If anyone's of royal blood, they haven't mentioned it to me. But we are all likely to have leadership in our lives, whether we are leaders, whether we are responding to leaders. And so this is for all of us. This wisdom of leadership is for all of us. And also, we're going to look at the idea of a better king. We're going to look at not only a way we can be better leaders, but about the best leader, which is King Jesus. Before we get onto that, let's look at the start of this passage in our section called Vice. Do not spend your strength on women. We're looking at verse 3. Your vigor on those who ruin kings. This seems like an interesting way to start the message. And it seems a little bit negative on first reading towards women. Do not spend your strength on women, your vigor on those who ruin kings. Is it saying that women are responsible for ruining kings? It's saying don't spend your strength on them. Is it saying disregard women? I think the evidence we have from this passage suggests this isn't the case. For a start, we know this is being written by Lemuel's mother. And also, spoiler alert for 2 weeks' time, where we're preaching on Proverbs 31 again, the second part of Proverbs 31 is a sort of poem about a virtuous woman, or the wife of noble character, which is generally attributed to the same author. And so we can see from the whole context of this passage that there isn't a negative attitude towards women here, rather the opposite. This is a passage which is strengthening the role of women. So therefore, verse 3 can't be about women being a problem to kings, all these nasty women that trip kings up. What's it talking about then? Well, it should come as no surprise to us that there often exists a power imbalance between men and women, and that power imbalance is often abused by those in power, by the men. When she's telling him, do not spend your vigor on those who ruin kings, she's telling him to flee from the temptation of the king, which is to spend their power in pursuing women. And that's pursuing generally sexual relations with women or having women around them. And this is the king. The king could call for a harem of women to be there for him at his every beck and call if he wished. And the sad thing is we know that this power imbalance, this abuse of that power imbalance, persists to this day. When we talked about the character of our leaders, we have to consider things like the current, it's been going on a while now, the Me Too movement, and all the things that have come from exploring and people finding out about all this history of abuse of power, generally by powerful men against women. That isn't something that we've fixed. It isn't something that's gone away. And so as men in this room today, as men listening to this today, we have to think, what are we doing in this context? Are we propagating this problem? Do not spend your strength on women. Do not let your mind be fascinated and focused and obsessed on this idea of pursuing women for your own ends. Do not let them ruin. Ruining kings in that context is the temptations that we fall into, the things that pull us away from what we need to be doing with our lives and into something which is harmful to ourselves and harmful to the women who become the objects in this situation. In verse 8, we're going to keep coming back to verse 8, speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. And in many cases, that imbalance still exists. There are still women who cannot speak up about these things. And we, as men, who often have more power in situations, need to be the ones to speak up for them. And moving on, there's a similar topic in verse 4. It's not for kings, Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine, not for rulers to crave beer. Once again, this doesn't look like a passage that's saying we can't drink alcohol. Again, we know that the feasts and the celebrations of a king in the sort of world of Judaism would have involved drinking wine. They would have involved that alcohol would have been part of their lives. And we know that Jesus drank wine as well. This isn't a forbidding alcohol. But again, look at the line of craving beer, not for rulers to crave beer, for them to be so desperate for a beer, desperate for alcohol. What's the reason behind that? I've said that Lemuel's mother isn't giving him a list of rules to follow. But it's in verse 5, lest they drink and forget what has been decreed. The king isn't to pursue women or to drink too much because otherwise they will forget their role as a king. They'll forget the responsibilities they have to the people who they are a leader of. In a way, this is talking about escapism. It's talking about knowing that we have a responsibility. We have a requirement placed on our lives. We have people under our care. And yet we're deciding to pursue something else, to get away from it. And maybe it does look like chasing after women or drinking alcohol. But this could equally look like scrolling on our phones when someone wants to talk to us, whether it's a friend or our children. It could look like watching Netflix when we know that there's work we need to be doing. It could look like any way we pull ourselves away from the people who need us. Maybe we're busy with church work instead of going and caring for someone and looking after them. This is talking about ways we get away from the things that we actually have to be doing, shedding our responsibilities in pursuit of something that is selfish. And this is the deeper problem. This is the vice Lemuel's mother is addressing. Do not forget the duties of a king. And it might feel like, well, we need these things. We need escapism. We need the distraction of a phone or watching TV or a drink even, because life is hard sometimes. We don't know what to do with these responsibilities. The reason we're scrolling on our phones is because we don't know what to say to this person. We don't know how to help. We feel helpless. We feel lost. And when we feel helpless and lost, our desire is to go and lose ourselves. Well, in all this, we have to look to the better king, to Jesus. In Gethsemane, Jesus prayed that God would take the cup away from him, that God would take away this thing he knew he had to do, this great burden of responsibility that he had to go to the cross. And he asked God to take it away. He didn't say, sure, whatever. He said, no, please take this away from me. But then he said something which I think we all find quite hard to say, which is not my will, but yours. I always feel a bit of a knot in my stomach when I pray that, because I think, well, really, I'd rather it be my will. Can it not be my will, maybe, this time? But Jesus prayed that, not my will, but yours. He wanted to escape. He had the same temptation to escape as we did. But he asked God to give him the strength to continue and do what needed to be done. And then he went through with it. And again, when we look to Jesus, we can look at something else, something better than just not having vices. The next thing I want to talk about is virtues. A king is not defined solely by not doing a bad thing. If you were to look at the life of someone or the life of a leader or the person that you are looking up to, you generally wouldn't describe them in terms of the things they don't do. Oh, I like this person. They don't get drunk lots. I like this person. I've never seen them be lecherous. But you'd say, no, I like this person. They're so generous. I like this person. They're always smiling. I like this person. They just talk openly. We don't just want to avoid vices. We want to cultivate virtues. In many contexts, leadership is something that sort of springs itself up on us. You might be in this room now thinking that I'm not a leader. I don't lead anyone. I don't lead anything. And for a start, that's possibly not true, but we'll talk about that a bit later. But you might become a leader. This might be something you find yourself doing sooner than you expect, being a leader. And it's a hard time to become a leader and suddenly think, oh, okay, best get really good at doing things now. No, instead, we need to be cultivating virtues of strengths of leadership before we have that leadership position so that they are there when we need them. There's an interesting part in this passage in verses 6 and 7, where it says, let beer be for those who are perishing, wine for those who are in anguish. Let them drink and forget their poverty and remember their misery no more. We've just talked about not drinking and forgetting the rights of the poor, and then it has this really kind of mean thing of saying, oh, the poor should go and get drunk. Let's let the poor people get drunk. When you look at the original language that was used to write this passage, this section is written more almost in a sarcastic tone, a little bit of dark humor for the sort of pre-BBC Three age. And it's got that kind of sense of, come on, Lemuel, come on. You're the king. Look at the things you have. And yet you want to go and drink? These people have nothing. They should be the ones getting drunk. And the counterpoint, the sort of unmentioned counterpoint to that is that they're not. They're not doing that. They're working. They're doing the things they need to do because their lives depend on it. Again, we can look at where Jesus talks about the widow's offering. That story where people are giving to the temple and a poor woman gives two coins. And Jesus says, that's the most valuable offering here. This section is not about someone being great and having loads of great things and doing great things. It's about the heart behind it. The widow's offering was this small thing. It didn't pay for a huge amount of upkeep of the temple, and yet Jesus said that was so precious. That person was virtuous. They were cultivating virtue in their life that even when they had so little, they had a desire to give it away. That's something that doesn't just come by sheer force of will. It comes from knowing God. It comes from being so dedicated to God that you want to do things. You want to do things for him. You want to do things for the people that he cares for, which is everyone, that you'll give that away. That's cultivating virtues. And that's what makes us respect leaders today. If we want to be a leader, if we want to lead ourselves, we need to think about those virtues. And it was very helpful last week. We had Russell come and talk to us about Romans 12. If you missed that, either catch up online or just look at Romans 12, 1 to 13. He was talking about the different elements that make up a good church. I was really excited when he was reading those things out because he was saying that some people are encouragers, some people are prophets, some people can teach. And I was sort of in my head thinking of different people in our church. It was exciting to think, oh, look, these people. How amazing. And I hope that for some of you, you heard some things that he said and said, oh, that's me. Or maybe you said, oh, that couldn't be me. I'd like it to be me. Well, the answer is that it can be you. Those things, those gifts are something that we all have. Recognizing and using those gifts is maybe a different thing, but we all have those. We need to look into what gifts we have and where those could be used to serve. That's not just serving the church. This isn't just a sort of, oh, let's all go and serve the church thing, although, you know, more than welcome to. But it's where can I serve somewhere? Where can I alleviate some of this pain and struggling and difficulty we see in the world? But again, we don't just do that through gritting our teeth and going, I'm so tired. I'm so weak right now. And yet, fine, okay, I'll go and do something good for someone. I've been told I should go do something good. I'll get through it. I'll do it. No, it's in looking to the character of Jesus, in looking to the things he told his disciples. He said to people to go and spread his name. He said to go and do these things because his name is important. His name frees people. His name frees people from the things that weigh them down. It gives us encouragement to go and talk about him, to go and do good for people. And sometimes that might just be helping someone without even mentioning that this is because you love Jesus. But other times it might be saying, maybe you can come to church. Maybe that's the help. We've had people recently who were baptized at Redeemer who their story began with someone in the church hearing they'd had a hard time and saying, well, why not come to church? See what you think about that. Jesus is a model of virtues that we can follow. Finally, why do we do all of this? Why is any of this actually relevant? We have to realize why we have a task. King Lemuel had a task in a sort of obvious fashion. King Lemuel was the king. Most likely he was the son of another king or another ruler. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts lately about different rulers in Europe through the sort of 1500s to 1800s. I know, fascinating listening, isn't it? And what's amazing is the story of how just like everyone was marrying everyone else and like you randomly inherited the throne of Spain one day and stuff like that. It was a really weird time of rulers, but some people just sort of become rulers like that. Oh, you're born into it. Great, you're a ruler. Well, that's not the case for most of us. Where are we leading? Where are we leading in things? I mentioned at the start, there are some obvious leaders. The boss at work, that's an obvious leader. Being elected to office, that's a pretty obvious leader. But there are other leadership aspects that we just sort of find we're doing. A lot of leaders emerge from what I call gap filling. You see a gap, you see something that's not being done, and you sort of think, oh, I'll go and do that. And after a while of gap filling, you realize you're actually leading in some way, area. There are also leaders we don't notice. There are leaders that we're unaware of. There are leaders that exist behind the scenes and we don't know they're leading or doing this thing. And we might never know they're doing this thing. And no one might ever know. And that means that no one sees them as a leader. No one says thank you or well done. It just sort of happens. You might be one of those leaders. And that can be quite difficult if you're someone who's never recognized. But that doesn't mean you don't have the same vocation. Verses 8 and 9. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and needy. It is a vocation in the Christian life to be leading in some way. There's what we call a calling. We might feel a call to some sort of leadership. I feel called to minister to children and see them raised up. I feel a call to worship God and to lead people in worshiping God. We might feel a call to managing the finances of a church, which I tell you is not a glamorous thing. There are callings that we have at work or in our job. Are we the leader who makes sure the people underneath them know the pressure they're under so they can work harder and get it done? Or are we the kind of leader who protects the people underneath us and says, it's okay, I'll go to that meeting, I'll talk, I'll try and make sure we get a fair deal, and you people can do the thing you're here to do, your job, your work, your creativity. You have agency in what you're doing. When we're leading our children, is it a case of do this, do that, or is it a case of I'm getting alongside you? I want to be there for you. I want to support you. But you also need to learn these lessons. It does say here, judge fairly. There isn't an aspect of leadership that is simply bowing to everything that's in front of you. It's discerning. It's thinking about how you're doing these things. And also defending the rights of the poor and needy. How are we doing that? In some ways, we will do that through our work in this community, work socially. But again, we will also have that calling to bring people to Jesus. If we believe the world is broken and the things people suffer are because sin entered this world, then Jesus is the solution to those things as well. There are ways we can alleviate direct suffering now, but there are also ways that we need people to come to something better, a better way of their lives. Jesus had an interesting challenge as a leader because he often spoke out against other leaders. He was particularly critical of the Pharisees, the religious leaders, who, as far as he saw, were neglecting their vocation. Their job was to try and safeguard people's relationship with God, and yet they were using people's relationship with God as a stick to beat them with, as a way to get their own power. What's interesting about Jesus' relation with power, though, is he also had a different approach to the Roman occupation of Israel. The Romans were occupying Israel at this time. They were not particularly good occupiers. And there were people within Jesus' own disciples, Judas Iscariot, for example, who wanted Jesus to be the king that would lead them in beating the Romans, in removing them from Israel, in removing the occupation. And yet Jesus didn't do that. He went so far as to suggest we should pay taxes to Caesar, and he even healed the servant of a Roman soldier, a Roman centurion. And this was clearly a difficult thing for people at the time to see. Why is Jesus not doing this, defending the rights of the poor and needy? Why is he not judging fairly? Why is he not overthrowing our oppressors? Actually, in all these ways, Jesus is still a better leader because Jesus knows the long game. Jesus goes from this to, after his resurrection, telling his disciples to spread his name over all the earth. And where does it eventually spread to? It spreads to Rome. And in Rome, Christians undergo persecution for tens, hundreds of years before eventually what happens? The Roman Empire adopts Christianity as its religion. They see the work of Christians in their communities. They see the good Christians are doing, especially in hard times, in times of plague and great catastrophes in Rome. The Christians are the ones who selflessly give up their position and their lives to help other people. And as a result, Rome itself becomes a hub of Christianity, spreading Jesus' name further than I think those first disciples would have ever realized was possible. See, Jesus doesn't just lead or criticize leadership. He subverts leadership. He uses the leadership of others to bring his name to other people. We talk about ourselves being a gospel-formed family on mission. A family has leaders. And that mission that we have together is our vocation. It's the thing that we're encouraged to do. It's the reason why we talk about vices and the things that are challenging to us, because those vices are the things that will pull us away from that mission. If we're busy dealing with these devastating problems in our own lives, if we're not paying each other attention, if we're neglecting our duties, If we're not cultivating these virtues, then we're not going to be ready for this mission Jesus has for us.
We're all leaders. That's the big reveal of this whole passage. We're all leaders. We're all doing something which someone else isn't doing. We're all in a position to speak to someone that someone else can't speak to. So we all have this leadership, which means this is a passage for all of us. I should have said that at the beginning, then some of you might have paid more attention, shouldn't I? This is a passage for all of us because we need to look to Jesus as the better leader and say other people need to hear about him too. When we see statistics like 30% of people in this country have confidence in the leadership, that is such a void to fill. And that won't just be this country, there'll be other countries as well. This is just highlighting a few places. There are people who need good leadership, who need to trust the people in positions of power over them. Whether it's in our workplace, whether it's in our family, we want to take this and we want to apply scriptural principles to our leadership. Be servant leaders like Jesus was. And then use that to spread Jesus' name. Why are you a good leader? Why do you care about these people? Well, because someone cared about me. Because Jesus cared about me. So I'm passing that on. I'm caring about someone else. We've said a lot about wisdom in Proverbs. Proverbs talks about wisdom. We often think of wisdom as this quite book smart thing. Oh, I'm wise because I've read a lot of books, or, you know, in my case, listen to a lot of podcasts about European history. That's not wisdom. Wisdom is understanding how these things, how this information we have, how this guidance from God should be applied to our lives. And I think it's a very fitting thing that Proverbs ends with this passage on leadership, on how to be a good leader, because we all have this requirement in our lives where we want to put wisdom into practice. Putting it into practice in our leadership is one of the best places. But I want to repeat that we can't do this alone. This is not a call to go home and be better. It's a call to follow Jesus more. It's a call to give those things to him. But those points where you struggle in leadership, I can't bear the pressure that's on me. I can't deal with the things people want of me. This person wants me to fix them and I can't. I can't help them. We want to pass that over to Jesus. It's Jesus who will be the best leader. It's Jesus who will come into people's lives and change them. We're just sort of along for the ride. But as part of that, we want to be involved. We want to be involved, whether it's shouting out for joy, raising our hands in the air, or talking to the person afterwards saying, wasn't that great? We want to be involved in that process, but Jesus is essential in this. If we discard Jesus, we're going to become the king who, like Lemuel is challenged about, is forced to just retreat, is forced to get away from it because we won't be able to handle it. We want to look at these vices and challenge ourselves about where our vices are. Bring them to the cross. We want to cultivate virtue. That will come through our communities, through being honest and vulnerable with people, through prayer and reading the scripture, knowing God better, and to understand our vocation. Who are we as leaders? Where are we leading? Where could we step up and lead? What's our calling? Where does God want us to be? And we will look at the King Jesus, the example of the best king, for how we can lead in whatever context we're leading in. Jesus knew that his leadership would be important. That's why he built in places where we can repeat words of Jesus to each other, ways that we can repeat the instructions that Jesus gave us so we can be united in following his leadership. Communion is one example of that. We do this every week at Redeemer because we believe that Jesus has said such an important thing in how we unite together as a family through this shared meal of communion. The night before he was crucified, Jesus took bread and wine, he blessed it, he broke it, and he said, "Do this in remembrance of me." And we're going to do this together today. We're going to have some people walk around and pass out the baskets of the cups with a little grape juice and wafer. And if you are following Jesus today, please take one. If you're not following Jesus today, please don't take one. Please, we wouldn't want you to do something, to show something with your body that you're not believing in your spirit. But as you take this, or as you watch other people take it, be thinking on this message from Jesus. Where are you a leader in your life? Where does Jesus want you to be? And if following Jesus isn't part of your life just yet, what could that mean for you? What could that mean for you? For you in your context as a leader to other people, if you took this step and started following Jesus, the better King. We're actually going to take this whilst we're singing today. So if I could invite Sam and Katrina to come up, and then I'll pray. And then when the band begins playing, we can take these cups. And if it is something that you've been challenged by today about leadership, about joining in this meal for the first time, there'll be people at the back, I think myself and Kathleen at the back, who can pray with you through this as well. But let me pray first for all of us. Father, thank you for this passage that teaches us about leadership. Let us know what the better King, King Jesus, looks like. Let us know how to follow his example. Let us desire to be good leaders where we have leadership positions. And where we don't have leadership positions, let us look for places where we can be a leader. And Lord, we do this through your strength, and we do this through our community, through reading of scripture, through praying together in our church. Amen.